Welcome to Equisport Radio, your VIP pass to the world of horse racing.
Down the stretch they come, Cassie's digging in at the rail.
Les Salzman, take you inside the gate, behind the scenes, to the heart of horse racing. Equisport Radio. Get tied on.
And they're off, and Featherbox comes out first, but Hennessy broke alertly as well. And Hennessy goes right to the lead. Diligence will press the pace, and Unbridled Song is there too. Maria's Mon keyed up today. He's now fourth on the outside. Featherbox is fifth, followed by Sir Cat. Four lengths back to the trailers, Gold Fever and Devil's Honor. Up the backstretch, and Unbridled Song. Mike Smith lets him roll, and with his unbridled speed, he runs a sparkling first quarter in 22-3, and Unbridled Song opens up by 5.5 lengths. A very ambitious move there. Diligence is second on the outside. Hennessy is third, 7 lengths behind Unbridled Song. Sir Cat is fourth with 5 furlongs to go. Maria's Mon has settled down now, 10 lengths from the lead, followed by Featherbox, 3 lengths to Gold Fever. Devil's Honor at the back of the pack. Unbridled Song has drilled an opening half mile in 45 2/5 seconds. It was fast. Perhaps it was too fast because they're closing in now. Here comes Hennessy, the favorite, moving through an opening on the inside. Diligence is right there. Maria's Mon is fourth, and Strong and Coming as they make the turn to the top of the stretch. The field coming past the quarter pole. Hennessy has seized the lead. Maria's Mon sweeping wide. Diligence right there. Unbridled Song is game in between horses. Those four coming to mid stretch together. Maria's Mon under Robbie Davis going to work and has taken the lead at the eighth pole. Diligence is second. Unbridled Song is third. Hennessy is faded to fourth. Devil's Honor is fifth, but it will be Maria's Mon who will come on to win it. Robbie Davis gives him a little tap to say well done, and well done indeed. He wins by 4. Diligence was second. There's a four-way photo for third. Unbridled Song set a totally ridiculous pace for this distance here, and he ran very well to finish about 5 or 6 lengths behind Maria's Mon.
Welcome to the Equisport Radio Network, and this afternoon we've got two very, very interesting guests. One guy, an Ivy Leaguer who winds up in a barn, and we're going to talk about that. And then a guy who's just been creating all kinds of stuff in the industry, Dan Torchman, who's with America's Best Racing and one of the founders of something called Equestricon. And we'll be talking to him in just a few minutes. But first, we've got Rick Schatzberg on the line. Rick, how are you?
I'm good. Let me just clarify something. You did say went from Ivy League to a barn and not a bar, right?
Actually, let me check the script. No, it's a barn. Although some of the guys that we mutually know, I'm surprised you didn't wind up in the barn.
Well, I tell you what, I spent 4 years up at Cornell, and a lot of those years were in a barn up there. So it was a pretty seamless transition, yep. Should I say.
But your family was in the horse business, you know, and I guess that was in the back of your mind when you went up to Ithaca.
My family still is in the horse business. We still breed. My mom and dad still have a small farm up in New York, and we have a couple of brood mares that are actually right now they're down in Kentucky. And we've been in the racing business since the early mid 70s.
And you know, back in about 1990. A couple of years after you started training, because you started training in, I guess, 88, right?
Yes, that's correct. We ran our first horse in 1988, and that horse is a good lead into the segment here, because he was my very first retired aftercare horse, and I bought a piece of property here on Long Island specifically so he could have the good life retired from after running 99 times.
Wow. First of all, it's a testament to both you and he that you were able to get to the post 99 times.
That takes a lot of work on both of your parts.
Yeah. What was that horse's name?
His name was Three Chopped Road, and we won with him the first time we ran him at Belmont Park. Jerry Bailey rode him for us. It was in the pouring rain, and it was my wife and I and my mom and dad in the winner's circle, and Jerry Bailey and this 4-year-old gray horse who lived till he was 18. And 9 of those 18 years he spent here with me in a paddock and doing some hunt trials across the street, and had lived a good life. And he provided us with a terrific racing career. He didn't win a lot of races. He only won 6 races, but he was second 25 times. So he was kind of known more for the bottom part of the exacta, and every jock that had ridden him, from Mike Smith to Jerry Bailey to Julie Crone and Eddie Maple, and you know, there were more exacta finishes than wins, but it was a lot of fun, and it started my career and got us up and running a long time ago.
One of the things I've noticed about you as a trainer is that you are able to keep your horses going year in and year out, and you know, that takes a certain skill. What do you think attributes to that?
Well, I don't know if skill or necessity. We don't have a lot of turnover with our inventory anymore. We're in the age, and believe me, this is no slight against the big trainers in the country. And my hat's off to them to be able to run an outfit with that many horses and a business model with the right personnel in place. But I always wanted to be not a boutique type trainer, but I did want to be a hands-on type trainer. So I never had more than 30 horses. And right now we're under 20, so it's kind of by necessity. You got to be very careful, pick your spots and try and keep them sound and get real lucky along the way. And, it's more of a tribute to the horses that we've gotten. We've had some terrific owners and, all along the way, we've taken some very modestly bred horses and ended up at the pinnacle of racing several times, and we ended up with 1 Eclipse Award winner, Maria's Mon, which is probably our most famous horse besides maybe a Firm Success, who was our most accomplished, because he ran until he was 9 years old and won a grade 1 at 8, and he won a grade 3 at 9 years old before he retired, and he's 23 years old and he's living the life of old friends down with Michael Blowen.
Which is phenomenal. Actually, I was looking at a Firm Success record the other day, and I had to double check because it looked like they had reprinted the years. You know, he had won the same races, you know, year in and year out. And that's a lot about both of you. You know, back in 1990, a guy that we both know, Aaron Cohen, said to me,
"Yeah,
you got to watch this guy, Rick. He's really on top of his barn," because at that time I was training and selling a bunch of horses, and Aaron and I did a lot of business. And, you know, we would always talk, who can you buy from? Who can you not buy from? You know, who's going to treat their horses decent? So if you buy from them, you're not, you know, the bar of soap isn't completely used up. And, you know, he had mentioned to you at that point. So over the years, you know, I've been watching you, and I got to tell you, as a horseman, it's a pleasure to see a guy take horses, and in many cases, you bought these horses yourself out of the sale, and keep them running and being successful with them.
Well, yeah, like I said, we've been lucky, and I've had a great, you know, great group of clients, and right now we have a real nice little about a 12-person syndicate with Clear Stars Stable. He's a good friend of mine that is the syndicate manager. We work together all the time. We enjoy the same things. We're the same age. And we put this together about 8 or 9 years ago, and we've come up with some pretty nice horses along the way. A nice filly named My Four Chicks is a stakes winner, and you know, the old hard knocking horse named Sandy Slew, who's 7 years old now, but you know, we've managed him so that, you know, he doesn't run that many races every year, but we're trying to make him count, and we can give him a break. And we go to the sales and buy a few. And we've claimed that we have a horse in on Friday that looks like he's been a pretty nice claim for us. He's coming off a win, a second and a third since claim, and he looks like he's got some upward mobility. But again, and I got a good crew. I got guys. My grooms have been with me for probably at least 10 years, and some of them 20. And they kind of anticipate everything from my standpoint. Again, we're a very size. Sure, we could use a couple more horses during the year. Sometimes we fluctuate, but on our numbers. But and I'm not going to take 1/10 of the credit for this success that we've had at any point during my almost 30 years of training. There's a lot of people that really helped us out along the way, for sure. It's a team effort, and I don't want to stand in the spotlight and take the credit for that. I think we've just been surrounded by pretty nice horses, and it's worked out very, very well. And, it's fluctuated. It's gone up and it's down, and you always look for that next crest, if you're down in a trough. So. But it's a wonderful sport, and lately I've got into the aftercare part of it through our horsemen's organization. I think that's been so gratifying and really opened up new avenues for as aftercare has gotten to be at the forefront of racing. Really, there's a need for it, and there's demand for it, and we have a great, great industry that's starting to feed into it, both financially and policy-wise too. And I think that's terrific.
Yeah, and it's great that you and the Horsemen's Association in New York and you guys have always been at the cutting edge of, not only aftercare but backside care. Tell us a little bit about the association and how you guys developed Take Two, and a little bit about that program.
Sure. Well, the architect behind Take Two and Take the Lead, which are two separate parts of the same program, and I'll try and explain that. But Rick Violet is the brains. And I was very lucky enough to have come on the board just as these programs were in their inception. And as we were gathering together as a new board of directors for NYTHA, he said, we're starting a new aftercare program. Would you like to be chairman of the aftercare program and help us out along the way? And be members or chairman of other committees, but when he asked me about aftercare, it fit like a glove, because my whole life has been both racing and retiring racehorses, either on my own place or to other people's, and I started out in the horse show business much like he did, and so when he asked me to take that role, I was thrilled. I was also that he didn't have of chairman of the Workman's Compensation Committee, because that's a whole other ball of wax. I got the really good feel good subject in the backstage committee, and the legislative stuff too. I like too, but aftercare has been a real subject that's close to my heart, and so when we. He explained the idea of Take Two and Take the Lead as the TAA, the National Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, was formed and getting on its feet. I think the timing was great. And like you said before, I'll use your words, NYTHA has always been on the cutting edge with regards to policy and protection of the horse racing industry, not only in New York, especially in New York, but Rick's also the president of the National PHA, and working with the other organizations under the PHA banner has been terrific. But to get back to Take the Lead and Take Two, Take Two is the encompassing name of the organization. But what Take Two is a thoroughbreds only hunter jumper show program. And Rick and Andy Belfiore, who's our executive director, along with a ton of help from Adele Einhorn, who's from Skidmore, and working with thoroughbreds transitioning to hunter jumpers, they started this this Take Two program, and it has grown in leaps and bounds. And we're covering the Take Two program is just for thoroughbreds. And it's a hunter or a jumper course. There's prize money upwards of $150,000 now. And we started a league, Take Two League, and we're in 30 different states. And it's really, really grown. And I think what that's done is create a demand that had waned for a long time for thoroughbreds to get back into the equestrian show horse industry. It kind of waned a little bit. The warm bloods came in and people kind of liked them, but the athleticism and the ability to learn and relearn that the thoroughbreds have innately, I think makes it, has created this demand back into this thing. And this has been a terrific program. And I was just at the IFAR in D.C., which is the International Forum on African Care Horses, which encompasses the U.K. and Japan and Australia and Europe and just to show you the thoroughbred finished sixth in the 3 days. It's amazing. This is an ex-racehorse that couldn't break his maiden, and you can see that now he's being ridden by a gold medal number. But his performance was outstanding, and it was meant for them to pop. The lead program, and what the Take the Lead program is, it's like a subsidiary too, but what we do is we provide service for the trainers and the owners on the backstretch that have horses that are reaching the end of their racing career. And so they'll reach out through either they've just gotten non-competitive when they started out non-competitive, or, you know, possible injuries and things like that. And they'll reach out to either me or to Andy, or go through the website, the NYTHA website on the aftercare icon, and reach out to us. And what we'll do is we'll provide the service of getting their accredited facility for rehabilitation, retraining, rehoming, and facilities, and we only use the accredited facilities with the TA. A lot of them go to New Vocations, which has several venues in Kentucky, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New York. Rerun has opened up a fantastic facility just south and west of Saratoga, which is wonderful for us because the transportation is very easy for us, and they get to these accredited facilities and under the bylaws of the TAA, and to get accredited by the TAA is a very, very, very tough accreditation process. There's several on-site inspections. There's several financial inspections with regards to getting your accreditation as being a 501c3 for a number of years, being in the business of aftercare and rehoming for a certain amount of years before you can get your accreditation and be eligible for this thoroughbred retirement nationwide pension plan. And the Take the Lead program provides a comprehensive vet examination. The vets have been fantastic for us. They'll come and do a soundness examination, x-rays and ultrasounds with permission of the owner or the trainer, skip. And if it's, there's any questions on them, we'll send them to the aftercare facility or to a surgeon or another veterinarian for a different set of eyes to see. You know, basically what we want to do is find out how much rehabilitation would be required if a horse had a certain injury or a strain or a tear. And just their best estimate, the committee of veterinarians will explain that to the aftercare facility so that when the horse gets to the aftercare facility and we provide the transportation through Take the Lead, so we don't want the owners, the onus isn't on the owners to provide the transportation. We'll do that. So when the horse gets to the facility, they know exactly what they're getting. We'll send them videos along with the x-rays and the comprehensive diagnostic and prognosis on any injuries. And sometimes we retire perfectly sound horses that are just non-competitive, and that's great. They can go right into retraining.
No, it's a great program. Matter of fact, I was at Florida Track the other day, which is the program here, down here in South Florida. And, you know, the quality of the work, that's one of the things that has impressed me, having been in the business for so many years. You know, when we first started, horses that were finished at the track, you had no idea where they were going. And if you bumped into them, quite often you were scared to death to see them. And the way these horses are being taken care of at these facilities and the flesh that they're carrying, you know, it's great to see. And those people that are doing the work, you know, many on a volunteer basis, you know, just phenomenal. You know, it's great to see.
And that's absolutely, like, people will congratulate, thank us for the work that we do. And I say, we have the easy part, okay? My only request to the train be before that last race, you know? Let's, you know, we're here for you guys, but let's easiest on the horse to transition and easiest on the people that are taking care of them, because these guys work, like you said, a lot of them on voluntary basis. They're on, you know, funds that are either through the TA, you know, and they're doing it out of love to the animal. And when you go onto their websites, and you can go into through TAA, you can look at any one of the 69 accredited facilities, and click on their inventory of horses that are up for adoption. The horses look incredible, and believe me, I know we're in New York, and these horses are taken care of like. I can tell you, when they get to this facility, they're learning a new job. They lighten up and they look lighten up bright wise, not flesh wise,
right.
But they look incredible, and they really are the unsung heroes. Are the people that work in the trenches at these aftercare facilities? I think Anna Ford's done a tremendous job with all of her facilities and all of the people that run each individual one, and Lisa Malloy up at Rerun, and we work with the folks at Akindale, which they're transitioning into more of adopt out type situation and through their accreditation, and we have a woman down in. We have a woman down in Virginia, Warhorse at Old Bob Bauer. She'll take any horse that's over 8 years old. It's just, that's her thing. If we get an 8-year-old gelding that looks like absolutely. We call her up. Her name's Barbara Loon. She's done a tremendous job. But she just wants the older gelding. And she said, we sent her a couple of horses over the last few months, and she's really done a wonderful job with those. And it's just a really great program. The issue is that there's a couple of issues with aftercare across the country, and it's some of the things that we discussed at the IFAR symposium. One of them is recognition and getting the word out, even on a small venue basis, racetrack by racetrack. You got to get your program out there. Knowing we're in the condition book, we're on the website, we have notices up all over the place, word of mouth. Spreads like wildfire. If somebody has a horse that they think may be heading in that direction, They text me, they call me, they email me, they call Andy. We now have an intern that's working in our office helping with some of the paperwork. So everybody has contact information. And not that they have to go through us. I mean, if they want to go directly to an aftercare facility, that's fine. There's no saying that they have to come through us. We're just providing.
But at least you're a clearinghouse, because most people don't know.
Yeah, exactly. You got to get the word out. And most of them will come through us, and some people may go direct, may have contact information. Some owners may have contact. You know, maybe they're part of the fundraising team at New Vocations or something like that, and they automatically get their stuff done, and they'll provide their own transportation, or they'll pay for their own transportation and do their own thing. But we've averaged over 75 horses, I think, over the since its inception per year, which is good for New York. And I tell you why. It's a different dynamic in New York than, say, Parks or, say, one of the other Penn National, one of the smaller racetracks, is that the first thing is we're an elite racetrack, and if you're not competitive here, it doesn't mean you can't go somewhere else. It doesn't mean you can't go to Jersey. It doesn't mean you can't go to Pennsylvania and race. And that happens a certain amount of time. We'll also, a horse that goes to another venue and needs our care that has been in New York, and if their aftercare facilities are booked up, or if their program is stalled a little bit and they can't handle it, we'll take them right back. I mean, we're just here for the horses. But so the one dynamic is that a lot of horses that aren't competitive just in New York on a competition level can go other places. But also, if you look at the big outfits, like the Todd's and the Chad's and the Kieran McLaughlin's, and we've done horses. We process horses through our program for them. But if you look at their pedigrees, a lot of them already have their retirement set. You know, a lot of the owners in the bigger outfits aren't just buying a horse for racing. They're buying a horse for life. And so they know that, you know, if they buy a $400,000 or $800,000 mare, you know, it's not just her racing career. So they already have it set up for breeding in the at the end of their career. So, but our numbers have grown every year, and this year we're just about halfway through the year, and we're on a pace to eclipse any one of the years with regards to getting horses to aftercare facilities. And I think that's, you know, it's just more word of mouth, and if you're comfortable with our.
Well, you know, I'm listening to you, and you're so excited about it. I mean, that's the really cool thing. You know, here you are, you know, you're getting close to actually next year is your 30th year of training, right?
Yep. September 4th of 18 would be 30 years. That sounds like a good time to call it.
Well, you got another 30. You reached the halfway point. You know,
thank you very much. I'll tell my dad you said that.
Is it a career or is it a sentence? That's what I always wondered. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, though. I'll be honest with you. Handling the Take the Lead program and to be able to go when we were invited down to the IR conference in D.C., it was enlightening to see the other programs in the other states. Also, when the TAA were doing their presentation and they mentioned the most influential programs over the course of the last 5 years, we were one of them. And I thought that was really terrific. It showed the Take the Lead program in New York was one of the most influential programs. And we were just putting it together in 2012. So we're really, you know, since 2013 been up and running, and it's grown every which way. And it's what's great to see is that the horses, when they go through the program and go through the rehab, their retraining, and you get the videos, and then they send their adoption notices out, and you see the people that get these horses, and every kind of vocation there is. I mean, not just in the show ring, but we've got polo, we've got our thoroughbred out there barrel racing and making, you know, and getting awards and stuff like that. Simple, we have fox hunters, It's amazing to see that the world is starting to embrace the thoroughbred for more than just racing when their careers are over. Because as a trainer and as a horseman, you know, these horses run on levels. And, you know, from the time they stand up to the time they stand in the starting gate for the first time, their comprehension and their ability to adapt, while they call them, you know, everyone says, oh, the thoroughbreds are all flighty. Well, let me tell you what, they're as smart as a whip. They know, they're, you know, certainly every species has their own range of intelligence. But let me tell you something, these horses, once they're in training, the things that they see on the training centers and the things that they see on the track and then the starting gate and everything that they go through in a race, in training races, in a 12-horse field in the wintertime or on the grass course with tight turns, it's really amazing how intelligent they are and how adaptable they are. And they're just a tremendous athlete, both mentally and physically.
Well, their resilience is the amazing thing to me. You know,
well, the resilience and their they. I'm trying to think of the word. They. I can't think of the word. They adapt to our mistakes.
I know they've adapted to mine for many years. So,
the word I'm thinking of is forgiving. They're very forgiving and adaptable, and hopefully some of the errors that we make along the way, they're forgiving us for, and they go on about their business. And if we learn to listen to them a little better and maybe train around little idiosyncrasies that we don't have to lose sleep over, we're going to let a horse be a horse, and then they'll show what they can really do.
And that's the, you know, that's the key to this whole thing, I think. You know, when we have them at the racetrack, it's a different environment for them. But with the aftercare programs, we're allowing them the opportunity. And don't forget, most horses leave the racetrack with only 20 to 25% of their life lived. Okay, they've got 75% of their life in front of them. And so with this type of program, we're allowing them to still have a job, but also to be horses. And that's real, real important at the end of the day.
Oh, there, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Even on the racetrack, if you look at, I always use Alan Jerkins as an example because he's the consummate horseman and loved it so much. I've been stabled near him at Belmont, and I was stabled next to him at Saratoga for 10 straight years. And the amount of time he's with those horses and out in the afternoon, grazing the horses, just letting them be horses. And he would say to me, as I was a young, I never wore, he always wanted to talk. Cause I guess he saw me as a young guy coming up, and I didn't inherit a lot of horses. I had 3 Chopped Road, and that was my first horse. And then we gradually picked up horses along the way. When I went out on my own, it was basically me and my wife and Chopper. We were growing, and we'd be out on our ponies, and he'd be discussing this and that. And why would you do this? And he would ask me questions. Why I would? I mean, here's the best trainer in the probably the history of the world asking me questions. But he always said, let the horse be the horse. If a horse wanted to work in 35, let him work in 35. Just let him have his head. Don't ask him if he wants. If a horse went, don't get upset if a horse goes fast. They did it easy. And I always had, you know, I always come back to that because I had a horse on firm success. He's 9 years old, but he would work fast. He worked fast because he could.
And he liked it, probably.
And he said, it's not how fast they go. It's how they go fast.
And that's so true.
If a horse can work in 59, but the jock's sitting still and he's just got one hold, well, you got yourself an awfully nice horse right there. He goes, you know, most any horse can go out there and work in 47 if you run their wheels off, but it'd take them 3 weeks to get them back out of the stall. But if you have a good horse, he works for it, don't fret over it. I mean, he's ready to go, and he was right. You got to keep him sound. You got to be careful. You got to watch your tracks. You got to nutrition and all that, obviously. But listening to him and having – having the pleasure and the frightening experience beating him in a grade one stake back when I was younger was probably one of the highlights of my career. And it wasn't a firm success, as Horse Name has indicated. And we beat Devil Is Due in the Pimlico Special back in the mid-90s.
I remember that race very clearly. Did he give you, when you got back to the barn, did he give you the look?
Yeah. He gave me that look for about 3 weeks.
Okay.
And then he started talking to me. but as indicated, was one of my aftercare horses here, because in that race, he tore a suspensory so bad that he had a year off, ran one other time, and then I retired him, and he was back. He was right here on my property with Chopper for 8 years, and because he was a gelding, grade one stake winning gelding of 8 of 15 starts, but he ended up being a wonderful trail horse, and he also went into the therapy business down in Kentucky, working with physically and mentally handicapped kids. But to get back to that race, you know, that horse, he was so talented. He could work. He was just a talented horse. We had bought him for not a whole lot of money up in Canada, and he just ended up, he had very moderate pedigree, but he just ended up being a wonderful horse in the wintertime, had tremendous speed and the endurance to hang on. And he broke terrible in the Pimlico Special. 600,000 grade one, were second choice, 9 to 5. And he broke on his face and trailed the field going down the stretch for the first time, trailed the field down the backside. And Devil Is Due, who's the heavier favorite, he was 7 to 5. You know, he sweeps to the lead, turn them for home, and here comes my horse from dead last and ran him down. And we won the race.
Who rode him for you that day?
What's that?
Do you recall who rode him for you that day? I remember the race. I'm trying to think who rode him for you.
Oh, Robbie Davis.
Okay.
Robbie and I.
You guys go back a long time.
Oh, Robbie and I think we were in the we were at a much smaller level percentage wise, Johnny and Todd. You know.
Yeah, no.
I think Robbie,
especially
Robbie
in the wintertime, you guys were killers.
Yeah, I think we were in the 25% to 30% range for winners for quite a long time. Robbie rode Mossflower for me. He, the only horse he didn't ride.
One of my favorite, by the way, one of my favorite mares.
Mossflower was a tremendous.
She was the
man.
Pure of the Blues, really, right?
No, that was Stop Traffic was Cure of the Blues. No, Mossflower was Affirmed, and the same few years that Affirmed Success. But we kind of rejuvenated the Harborview breeding there with Affirmed, and I had a horse for Ken Ramsey that same year that won a stake horse by Affirmed. So we had three stake winning horses by Affirmed in 98, 99. But Mossflower was a tremendously talented horse and could run on the turf and the dirt. She never won a stake on the turf, but boy, she put in some good runs in the Flower Bowl and the Diana, and just was tremendous. And her race in the Hempstead, which is now the Ogden Phipps, she won by 12 lengths, and she went a mile 16th and 139 and change or something on the dirt. Just a tremendously talented mare. Just couldn't keep her sound enough to have a long career.
You know, that's the scary thing, I think, Rick, when you've been in the business as long as we have, and they start changing the names of stakes, and it's not just once, but twice they changed the name, you say, but, I've been around a while.
Yeah, I understand. I tell you what was a nice honor, though, is that they named a stake after a firm success at Belmont Park, and I thought that was a wonderful tribute to a horse that he wasn't, believe me when I tell you, he wasn't underappreciated. But Affirmed Success ran 42 times, and 38 of those times he ran 100 buyer figures or more, which is unheard of. When you look
exactly,
at
that's what I was about to say. It is unheard of. Today, if a horse runs 3 100 pluses, they're advertising it.
He's just a tremendous, tremendous, and versatile. You know, he switched off from 6.5, 7 furlongs to a mile on the turf. Won the Naira Mile on the dirt and the swap, and won the Toboggan twice, won the Carter, the General George, you name it. I mean, I have a corner of my whole upstairs. It's actually not a corner. It's a whole hallway just of stake wins for that horse. And look at it, he's 23 years old. Michael Blowen, I spoke to him 2 weeks ago, and he said, Rick, we got to write a handicap for this horse. 23 years old, and he's chasing everybody around the field. Just awesome. Just really cool stuff.
You know, you mentioned Michael, and earlier we talked about, you know, that woman that takes in horses 8 years old and older. As you know, we're doing a thoroughbred-only show series here down in South Florida. Matter of fact, I live right near one of your old buddies, Tommy Skiffington.
Sure. Have old buddy. Sure.
Yeah, but in the show series, what we're doing is we're doing a flat class for horses over the age of 10. We're calling that the old friends stake. And
That's great.
Well, we think that these lawn ornament type of horses, and God bless them, there's a lot of them, you know, it gives the owner something to look forward to do. You know, and we're going to judge it. We're not going to worry about, you know, those big ankles or knees. We're just going to be concerned about how that horse has turned out. So,
fantastic.
You know, we want to try to have a little bit of
fun. What a great idea.
Thanks.
That's a great idea. And to, you know, to tribute the old friends, Michael's done such a wonderful job giving those horses sanctuary and been able to have folks come in and see the horses up close and look at videos of their old races and things like that. I mean, I think it's a tremendous idea. It's thinking out of the box. And, I think it's a one. Anything that gets these horses into the aftercare that they deserve, I think is wonderful. And, you know, that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about a little bit too. Besides, with the TAA, I mean, the exposure is one thing, but also funding. And it's a very difficult thing to fund something like this. And they've done a fantastic job doing it through the racetrack, whether it be per start fees or whether, you know, the stallion managers that have offered up and the sales companies and whatnot. And, you know, there's a good pinch in there, but the TAA and their groups, and they have committees that are working on different ways of funding this program for thoroughbreds. And besides just doing fundraisers and things like that, and they got a lot of good people. Alan Gutterman came up with a wonderful idea down there in D.C., and I think it's something that they can run with on, you know, getting the fans involved. And I think that's a great idea. It's part of the industry that kind of isn't tapped into aftercare, but I really think the true fans love to go to the races on the big days. They're the fans of this, because, and this, I'm paraphrasing Alan said, you know what, they very rarely yell at the horse if they get beat. They yell at the trainer, they yell at the jockey, they yell at themselves, but the horses are their heroes. And I think if there can be, whether it's a race or a certain day or something like that, I think the fans, and Alan, this is all Alan's, I'm not taking any credit for this, because Alan came up with this idea when he was down at the conference a few weeks ago in D.C., get the fans involved, and I think they'd be more than happy to do it on the big days when you get the big crowds out there. You know, you have part of the exposure of the exposure of aftercare for these people. I think they'd really, really buy into it and see it's a great, great, great thing. You have it for the horses, you have it for the jockeys, but from our point of view, you know, I think it gives them something to grab a hold of and say, look, I helped this horse, you know, this horse that ran so many times for us, and they get to see him and through their post-race careers and stuff like that. I think, but you know, that's another challenge for the TAA, and they do a fantastic job with their accreditation process. And there's and the industry is feeding in, and I think it'll feed in more. And it's a very, very successful program. And Les, you'll understand it's one of the national programs that work, trying to get different jurisdictions and different venues to work together. It's very difficult on many subjects. We all know what they are, but aftercare is a subject that is inarguable.
It's something you can't be against.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's inarguable. It's a necessity, and it's something that the industry in itself needs to help fund. And I think that's why the TAA crosses jurisdictional lines, and it does so well, because it's a subject that is a necessity, and it's a great cause, and it's inarguable that it's needed, because, you know, there are a lot of horses that are born every year, a lot of horses going to the races every year, and you know that there are a lot of horses leaving the racetrack every year, and they need a soft landing, and they need to be retrained for new new things on the horizon. Like you said, most of them are 25-30%, you know, through their lifespan. And they can do a lot of things, and they want to do a lot of things. They don't just want to stand out in the field and eat grass. That's great.
You know what? They all need a job.
Exactly. They're like labs. Labs love to lay on the couch, but my lab also likes to carry up the groceries. You know, he's got a job. He likes to feel like he's doing something. And horses are the same way. It keeps their mind sharp. You know, it's one thing. You know, if they have to stay out in the field, in and out or whatever, because they've got some, you know, arthritic conditions. So that's one thing. But horses that are good and healthy or been rehabilitated, boy, they really want to go out there and do something. And it's amazing to see the different vocations that they come up with. Like I said, to see a thoroughbred doing barrel races and stuff like that, competitive. The smaller ones can do polo, and certainly the hunter jumpers and the three-day eventing and timber horses and stuff like that. It's just amazing. And it should be no surprise, but it's amazing.
No, you know, years ago, I had a riding academy here in Wellington. We had a 29-year-old retired racehorse. And this old guy, he evented. When he stopped eventing, he came to work at the farm with us, and we used him as a lesson horse. And then he got older, and we kind of backed down a little bit on the amount of work he was doing, but he was still showing and everything else until he was 29. When he turned 31, had a woman that was taking lessons from us that was 69. And the Dressage Federation has a century club. If the horses and the rider are total 100 years, they can compete and get into this club. So here's this horse.
Well, it's wonderful, yeah.
And he was one-eyed. He was one-eyed most of his life. Okay, at the age of 31, toting this woman around in the Century Club. And so when you talk to me about the variety of things a horse can do, you know, there's pretty much nothing they can't do. You know, they're amazing. Right.
Yeah. It is really something. It's like I said, for me, it's taken up, look, I'll admit it, it takes up a lot of my morning, and I'm fine with it. You know, I'm fine with it. I get done training, I get a phone call or a text, and it's for, you know, let's put it this way. With modern technology, I can be walking a horse to a track, get a text on a horse. I can email the forms to the people that need the forms emailed to them. I can check with the aftercare facilities to find out who has an opening, who has availability. I can check with the van drivers, who has availability to go here or there. I can check with the vet, can you please email these x-rays? And I can do all that with a smartphone all in 10 minutes. And then by the end of the morning, we've got everything pretty much set up. Everybody's involved. You know, so it's, you know, you couldn't do that 10, 15 years ago. But now with there's no excuse. You can, you know, people can get it with the modes of communication right now, through either email or text or Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And now you can move PDF files and X-ray files and all kinds of files around like that, so people can look at them now. You can get your, you know, if I need Patty Hogan to give me an opinion on, you know, on a knee or an ankle or something like that, or an ultrasound on a superficial digital flexor tendon or something like that, she gets it, boom. Unless she's, you know, unless she's in surgery, she'll send me back an email with her opinion and decide whether, the surgery would help in aftercare, or it's not necessary, or this is our percentage here, there, the other thing. It's just been amazing that we've grown all, you know, as the technology has helped us out too. So it's made our jobs a little bit easier, but a lot more efficient if nothing else.
Well, you mentioned something earlier, and I'm going to let you go in a couple of seconds. You mentioned something earlier in the show about the fact that when you're sending these horses to their next home, the people have kind of a full idea of what that horse is all about. And so when they take the wrapper off, they're not getting a surprise. And that's so important, you know, and now we can do that because we have the technology.
Yeah, exactly. And I tell, look, and people, it takes a little while for people to get comfortable with disclosing, especially when you're a trainer and say a horse gets hurt or something, like, you feel bad. And yet, you know, but we need, I said, look, I've been there. I've been doing this for years. I've had everything. You know, I've seen slabs and I've seen chips and I've seen bows and I've seen it all. And I'm not judging you. What we need to do is make sure that we have all the pertinent information so that when this horse gets to the aftercare facility for rehabilitation, they're ready to go at, you know, the minute that horse steps off the band. So, and I tell our veterinarians that are doing the lameness or the soundness exam for them, I said, be conservative here. Tell, if you think a horse is just slightly off, well, tell me the horse is slightly off. We'll take some videos and do that and send it on so they know exactly what that horse is going to look like when he gets off the band at the rehabilitation center, or if it's the retraining center. You know, horses can go right to the retraining center also if they're good and sound. But it just makes it easier, and people have gotten very much more comfortable with me or Andy coming by the barn and then having either a third party vet take a look at the horse. And it's just, you know, it's just a sheet that says, you know, this is what I saw, and this horse is in this condition, and the X-rays are on file, and this is what we saw, and this is what you can expect, and this is our best, this is our best guess on the amount of rehabilitation or downtime this horse will need, and we could be off by a little bit, but this is, you know, we have the best people making those predictions for it, and that's how the program works, and that's why it works.
Well, as a horseman and a fan of the sport, you know, I want to thank you, the other Rick, Rick Violette, and the whole team.
He's amazing. Rick puts in more hours. I don't know how he runs a stable that size, that efficiently, winning races, and he's not only with the aftercare stuff, but he's in Albany and he's in Washington and he's, you know, he fights for horsemen and horses like nobody I've ever seen. And he's a tremendous asset to the community, the New York community and the national community through the THA. I mean, it boggles my mind how much time he puts into this, and he really deserves the credit. And
he's such a genuine guy, too.
No agenda, and he will tell you exactly the way he feels about it. Whether you're a board member, a trainer, or somebody else that we deal with, his one agenda is care for the horses and care for the industry. Period, end of story, that's where it ends. He just wants to see the industry and the horses and the people that the backstretch workers and the owners. He just wants to make sure that they are protected to the full extent of his ability, and he's gone beyond that.
You know, a few years ago, I'm on the clocker stand at Palm Meadows, and he's there. And, you know, there are a bunch of guys from New York. It was towards the end of the winter meet, and that's when you guys were having the workers' comp issues. And he's on like two phones.
We always have workers' comp.
Where in this game don't you have that, right? But he's on the phone talking to this guy, that guy, talking to some trainers. And one of his horses works. It goes 46-2. And back on the phone. Boom, 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 boom. You know, incredible focus. But a great guy. And again, I appreciate all that you guys are doing. Two important things. First of all, how's the shoulder?
My shoulder, I'm actually done with rehab, official rehabilitation. I don't think it's ever going to be 100%, but I think that was what they told me. But back playing USTA on a limited basis, and hopefully, you know, by this time next year. My wife's mixed doubles team just made it to the Nationals, which is fantastic.
Congratulations.
My wife, thank you. Yeah, we're heading to Mobile, Alabama in November. And it was a great sectional. She won the whole East, the Eastern section of the USTA with her mixed doubles team. And hopefully next year after my rehabilitation and my skills come back, I'll be good enough to be on our team. If not, she'll put me on the bench like she did this year.
And you have a son, right? You have a son?
My son Ryan is in his third semester going for a master's degree in marine science and environmental management at the University of Sydney, Australia.
I guess the Skype bills are pretty expensive, huh?
Well, I tell you what, honestly, it's cheaper for him to go to school in Australia than it would be to go here. I was very surprised. Of course, he didn't apply to schools here in the States. He graduated from BU, went on, did some internships for a couple of years working in South Africa and up in Provincetown at the Coastal Studies Academy up there. Then he told us, well, I got into a couple of schools for my master's degree. We asked him, he said, which one? He said, well, I got into University of Sydney and the University of New South Wales. I said, what about Louisiana or Long Island or I didn't apply to any of the states. But you think maybe we could have known that? So anyway, he's doing his thing, and the closest he got to working on the racetrack was bartending at Ciro's during the meet, and he made a lot more money than I did that year.
Well, it sounds like you're really proud of him. And Rick, I appreciate
really,
you taking
really
the time. Is. You know, your schedule's busy, but we really, really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll induce you to come down to see one of our shows down here this winter.
I would love to. If I can get my wife to get to break away from the tennis leagues, which are
I'll tell you what,
we could do that.
I can get reservations at some pretty good courts down here. Let's get her down here.
All right, very good. Let's thank
okay.
you a lot.
A pleasure.
It.
Take care. And this is Les Salzman on the Equisport Radio Network. We thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.